Case is Idris against Chicago. Mr. Berman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. I would request 3 minutes of rebuttal time as opposed to the five that is listed in the sheet. Your Honors, I'll be making 3 points this morning. Number one, the red light camera ordinance at issue in this case cannot pass a substantive due process inquiry because it imposes a quasi-criminal proceeding that penalizes vehicle owners for owning a subject vehicle without allowing them to defend the fact-based underlying violation. Number two, the ordinance does not provide vehicle owners with procedural due process because prosecution under the ordinance is based on purely inadmissible and unreliable evidence. And three, the ordinance does not pass an equal protection evaluation because, as drafted, the ordinance does not have a legitimate purpose and it treats different types of vehicle owners differently without any rational basis.
Now, the city points out that a person issued a ticket under this ordinance can contest the charge with evidence that the facts alleged in the violation do not support a finding that 98020C was violated. Does that alter your argument at all?
The city miscites the applicable ordinance. The ordinance that the city cites to is 9102040, which says that a person charged with violating section 98020C or 916030C has the six defenses, including that the facts do not support a finding that 98020C was violated. And 98020C was the fact of the red light violation. But that is not what the city charges against these vehicle owners. The city charges in its notice of violation violations of section 9102020. Section 9102020 does not have those five defenses. Section 9102020 says the registered owner of record of a vehicle is liable for a violation of this section, and then it says it shall be a defense, and then it lists the three defenses that we have identified, which is that either the operator was already ticketed, or the vehicle was stolen, or the vehicle was under a written lease. So the city cited ordinance is for a violation of a different ordinance, not 102020.
How is this case any different from the long line of cases that place liability on the innocent owner of property that's used in an unlawful manner?
If the court is referring to Towers versus City of Chicago as one instance, and I'll use that as an example because I think it's probably the most salient and has been discussed the most, the difference between this case and Towers is that in Towers and in the forfeiture cases, the innocent owner is allowed to raise a defense of the underlying violation. In Towers, there was a fine issued against the vehicle owner when a gun was found inside the vehicle. But the vehicle owner in Towers had the ability to prove that the item was not unlawful. And that's where we, again, get into this distinction between what the ordinance, the 102 ordinance, says versus the 8 ordinance. The 102 ordinance does not allow the hearing officer to get into this factual determination of whether somebody could have gone through a red light for some reason. And certainly, given that our position is that this is a revenue-producing piece of legislation, the city does not want a hearing officer to get into this factual determination, because a vehicle owner could certainly come to a hearing officer and say, well, outside of sight of the cameras, there was an emergency vehicle coming, and the vehicle owner had to get out of the way because the vehicle owner would have been violating a separate ordinance if he had not gotten out of the way of an emergency vehicle, so the vehicle owner properly went through a red light. That is what this ordinance is designed to avoid. And that is why it's drafted differently than the Towers ordinance. And that really is the heart of the substantive due process problem in this case.
But why isn't it rational and even a good idea to put pressure on vehicle owners to be careful about whom they lend their cars to by holding them accountable for lending them to you know, their cars to bank robbers and drug dealers, traffic violators, prostitutes, I don't know.
If the court is getting into the equal protection analysis, I think there are two issues. Before we even get to the rational basis prong, we get to the issue of whether there's a legitimate government purpose for this particular ordinance. There are no facts of record to indicate that there is a legitimate government purpose.
Rational basis test doesn't require facts of record. Federal court's not going to retry the basis for state legislation.
Understood. Even assuming that, certainly in cases, in certain circumstances, there can be a valid reason for a public safety ordinance or a tax or a revenue-based ordinance. But this particular ordinance does not concern itself with public safety because this particular ordinance does not concern itself with whether the person driving through the intersection is the owner of the vehicle or not. This intentionally disregards the fact of whether the owner was operating the vehicle. And as far as the rational, then getting into the rational basis issue, because we get into the classification difference between vehicle manufacturers and dealers who are exempted under the defense that's provided and vehicle owners who may have either provided they may have entered into a written lease for somebody and given somebody their car. If anything...
Counsel, I'm interested in a somewhat different question, which is what this case is doing in federal court. Seems to me that all the arguments you're making are effectively defenses. If the city issues a citation, your client may have defenses to enforcement. But it's pretty fundamental that those defenses have to be presented in the state enforcement mechanism. The federal court abstains from trying to preemptively resolve defenses in prospective state cases. Why should we decide anything in this case?
No, the abstention doctrine, number one, was not raised.
That I understand, but the Supreme Court has held that federal courts can and often should raise abstention on their own.
I think the issue, the heart of the matter is that no vehicle owner can raise another defense. I think that goes to the heart of it. There is no other defense that can be raised in pursuant to this ordinance. This is not an instance where you present a defense and a hearing officer says, well, I don't think that defense applies in this case. The ordinance at its heart does not allow for a meaningful defense or opportunity to be heard because of specifically how it's drafted, which also coincides with the type of evidence that this particular ordinance requires to be utilized. Really, there's some overlap between substantive due process in this regard and the procedural due process. The type of evidence that this ordinance requires is in and of itself inherently unreliable. It is gathered, sifted, sorted, and sent over to the city by Redflex, an Australian company, that gets paid in part to be an informant. That is at its heart what Redflex is. There is a state statute that says that evidence cannot be submitted by somebody who is getting paid on essentially a contingency basis, unless it's a flat fee. The contract with...
I don't understand what any of this has to do with the abstention question. And supposed violations of state law can't be raised in federal court at all.
That is an example of the procedural infirmities. We are not saying that this violates the Detectives Act. That is an example of the procedural infirmities with the evidence that is required to be used by this statute, by this ordinance, rather. I don't think abstention is appropriate because we specifically have raised this as a federal constitutional issue in conjunction with the state constitutional issues and in conjunction with the state statutory violations that we alleged.
I'm still lost about the abstention question. All abstention cases arise are interesting only because the plaintiff has raised some kind of federal issue. The fact that you've raised a federal issue doesn't make abstention inappropriate. It sets the stage for abstention.
I think
is there some reason why, if you raise these arguments before the hearing officer and they're rejected, they can't be pursued in state court on review of the hearing officer's decision?
They would be pursued in a very similar fashion to how they were pursued in this case. Even if this case went through the administrative procedure and a case were subsequently filed in circuit court, which is where this case initiated before it was removed by the city, we would still have the same types of allegations.
Maybe you've just said the answer. Maybe one would construe the removal by the city as the waiver of any of the benefit of any abstention doctrine. I mean, we know that happens for 11th Amendment doctrines. State or local government removes, it can't then assert the 11th Amendment as a bar.
I have not specifically researched that issue since that has not come up in this case, Judge. The final point I wanted to make on procedural due process, because we've talked about substantive and we talked about equal protection to some extent, is the invalidity of the evidence. One of the case that the city goes to is the Van Harken case, the Van Harken versus City, which deals with the parking adjudication system, similar to this setup, similar to this ordinance. The court upheld the Van Harken setup because, in large part, what you have is a stopped vehicle. You have a police officer who is writing a ticket, and the court said that the ticket itself really is fine to set the stage for a hearing on the ticket itself. We don't need to have the police officer called in to say, I saw the car, and I wrote this ticket.
Well, how is the photographic evidence here any different from the traffic ticket in Van Harken, which, of course, sufficed in lieu of requiring an officer to appear at a hearing?
Number one, the photographic evidence is not obtained by the city itself. The photographic evidence is obtained by a third party. Therefore, you don't have the initial reliability. You don't have a police officer who's sworn to uphold the law.
Isn't it even more, isn't it better evidence? You with a police officer, sometimes they're tired. They don't really see what occurred properly. It's
not better evidence in this case.
They have to get their numbers up or whatever they do there.
I don't know that argument, the policeman has to make a quota, and that's why he wrote this ticket, would play very well in before a hearing officer. But the contract with Redflex specifically in this case puts a premium on Redflex supplying the city with images that Redflex believes the city can use to enforce the ordinance and to collect revenues. There is that incentive system specifically for Redflex that says if program-wide enforceability percentage is less than 85, then the city will suffer harm that is difficult or impossible to calculate, including loss of revenue relating to red light violations for which citations were not issued. And there is a calculus for reducing the revenue to Redflex that derives from from those images. So there is every incentive for Redflex to provide images that are favorable to the city. The pictures are also hearsay. They are not necessarily used against a party opponent because there is no evidence that the driver, the person allegedly going through the light, is the opponent of the city in this case. The opponent is the vehicle owner. So there are specific differences between this case and Van Harken, essentially going to the nature of the unreliability of the evidence. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. Mr. Norfolk.
May it please the Court. The challenged ordinance provides the city with an efficient method of enforcing its already existing laws against running red lights. No one can dispute that the city has a legitimate interest in enforcing its laws as a general matter. And these particular laws provide the city a particularly strong basis and interest for enforcement, because the people who violate these laws and violations of these laws often result in serious accidents, it's been shown, and the city has a very strong interest in preventing such accidents to protect its citizens and its visitors. And therefore, there is a rational basis for the ordinance, and it survives the scrutiny under the principles of substantive due process. I'd like to turn, Chief Judge Easterbrook, to your question about abstention. It's something that hasn't been explored, and I think maybe I can shed a little light on the issue. Below, in the state court, what was filed by the plaintiffs here was not a complaint for administrative review. In fact, these plaintiffs did not proceed to the administrative hearing of any sort, and they did not attempt to...
Some of them just pleaded guilty and paid.
Exactly. And they did not attempt to challenge...
And that left me perplexed why you didn't assert res judicata. Because if you have the opportunity to make a defense and don't make it, you can't make it in some separate standalone suit. But res judicata is an affirmative defense and hasn't been raised.
That's absolutely true. It hasn't been raised, and to the extent that this court finds that that's been abandoned or forfeited, we're comfortable to proceed to the merits. I think that the question here for us was that essentially a standalone lawsuit was filed against the city challenging the constitutionality in sort of an ambiguous manner of the ordinance itself with regard to whether... I mean, it wasn't clear whether or not this was attempting to be a facial challenge or an as-applied challenge. And so the way that we proceeded was the way we often proceed in cases where the federal constitution is invoked. We removed it to federal court for the determination of those federal questions. Had this been an administrative hearing...
It seemed to me that since the city removed it, it would be inappropriate for the federal court to abstain. The city has already told us that it prefers a federal decision to a state decision. And that's incompatible with the premise of abstention.
The other thing, I agree with that, Chief Judge Easterbrook. The other thing that's incompatible with abstention is the fact that there weren't any ongoing state procedures from which to abstain that dealt with the administrative ruling.
The Supreme Court has held that you can't come to federal court just by withholding your claim from the state proceeding, waiting for it to end adversely, and then moving to federal court.
You cannot,
that's way back in volume 422 of the U.S. reports.
You cannot come to federal court as a plaintiff, or you cannot...
That's what the Supreme Court has held.
You cannot bring... I'm not certain if that principle applies in the removal context or not. Regardless, setting aside the question of whether or not the city has forfeited or abandoned or waived its right to rely on abstention principles or res judicata principles, the fact remains that as a matter of constitutional law, the three elements of the 14th Amendment that they attempt to invoke here do not avail them. Substantive due process only requires a rational relationship. In a case like this, to take a step back, actually, in a case where there's no fundamental right involved...
I'm lost. Rational relationship test is the equal protection standard. Substantive due process depends on the existence of a fundamental right. I thought your argument about substantive due process was that there is no fundamental right to run a red light and avoid detection.
That's right, and that's the step back I was getting ready to take. This court has noted in many cases that unless there is a fundamental right, and the Supreme Court has noted that you need to identify the right, specific right at issue.
You just noted it. That's a holding of the Supreme Court in Glucksberg, among other cases.
That is true, and we do cite those cases, and we do rely on that. However, we do take the next step, which this court sometimes takes, and which other courts sometimes take in the substantive process context, to say that in an instance where there is not a fundamental right involved, that a rational basis review will be undertaken. Now,
equal protection standard.
To the extent that a rational basis review were to be undertaken by this court, first of all, we agree completely that given the fact that there is not a fundamental right involved, that substantive due process can be found to be completely inapplicable. However, to the extent that a rational basis sort of review applies, it's clear in this case that the city has more than one legitimate interest in this ordinance, enforcing its laws and protecting its citizens, and that the ordinance itself is rationally related to those legitimate interests.
Why don't you just argue that the city doesn't have to have the most rational plan? Just a rational plan.
That's, I think that in our brief we make that argument, and I agree completely, Judge Robner, that that is the standard here. The question is whether or not it essentially makes sense, whether it is in any way reasonable to believe or to find legislatively that by holding an owner, whether that owner be characterized as innocent or not, holding an owner responsible for the use of their vehicle by somebody who they entrust their vehicle to or somebody who they allow to have access to their vehicle due to their own carelessness, is going to have any deterrent effect to the violations. And it makes perfect sense, and it certainly isn't loony, as some of the cases have expressed the standard, for the city council to say, we believe that this is going to lead to fewer red light violations. And the fact is that has been borne out in reality.
Let me just take you somewhere else. Is it really true that the only interest at stake is a property interest in the $90 fine? What happens if a person gets 25 citations for running red lights? Is there a potential criminal penalty here?
There's no criminal penalty provided under city law, and there's no criminal penalty I'm aware of. I am aware that I believe the number is five, that once you get five unpaid red light camera violations, your license can be suspended. Beyond that, I don't believe that there are other enforcement or other problems.
So, in other words, evidence of running red lights, 25 red lights. Well, can it be used against someone to increase a penalty for a future crime like drunk driving? I'm just wondering.
Sure.
The usages of.
I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't at first point out that this hasn't been argued or briefed. But to answer your question, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
My understanding is that the only interest that is directly, I mean, the ordinance shows that the only interest that's directly involved here is the amount of the fine. Conceivably, there might be some attenuated interests that might follow after that. The only one I know for sure is the possibility of a license suspension. But even that would not represent, first of all, a fundamental right. There's no fundamental right to hold a driver's license. And secondly, it hasn't ever been held by any court that I'm familiar with that the right to drive implicates anything other than implicates, for example, a liberty right or anything that might be considered.
Well, it's not a fundamental right in Illinois. It would be a fundamental right in Los Angeles.
Fair enough. That's why I'm in the Seventh Circuit and not the Ninth Circuit, gladly. To proceed with our argument with regarding substantive due process, just to rebut the attempt to distinguish Towers in this case. This is a Towers case. This is a case that follows directly from Towers and in state court, the Jodan case, and that follows on the heels of Bennis and the long line of Supreme Court opinions going back through Prohibition and back to piracy days that say it is completely constitutional with regard to substantive due process to hold an innocent owner, quote-unquote innocent owner, responsible for the unlawful or inappropriate use of their property. So as far as we're concerned, this falls squarely under that principle and is essentially controlled by Towers, because Towers said that if this principle applies in the forfeiture context, which is what Venice and the Supreme Court cases had to do with, then it certainly is applicable in a context where there is a fixed fine, and in each case you know that the person being held liable is going to have a limited and quite small exposure to liability. The argument that plaintiffs make with regard to whether or not the defenses are available is not a strong argument, because it attempts to read out of the ordinance section 040, which provides the defenses that they say are not available. They're trying to technically rely on the fact that there are two different sections that purport to say these are defenses and say that you should only look at one of them, when the fact is you need to read the ordinance as a whole. And the fact is that this ordinance, the red light camera ordinance, does not really create any legal responsibilities. It is an enforcement, an ordinance that enables the city of Chicago to efficiently enforce its pre-existing laws against running the red lights enforcing them with an eye towards deterrence, which is one of the main reasons that laws exist, to deter conduct that is antisocial, illegal. I mean, not illegal, obviously, but antisocial or creates a danger to the public. So this is a case where Section 040, which says if somebody is caught using a red light camera running a red light, they may proceed to a hearing, which this plaintiff chose not to do, and at that hearing they may present the following defenses. It enumerates a number, one of which is that the citation does not establish the fact that one of the ordinances that makes it illegal to run a red light was violated.
Would you be kind enough to comment on Mr. Berman's his response to my first question regarding your alleged misciting of the ordinance?
The misciting of the ordinance. I think that's sort of what I'm trying to get at here, that the argument the plaintiffs are making now is that the citations issue under the red light ordinance, under Section 020 of the red light ordinance, and therefore you can only look to Section 020 with regard to defenses. Section 040, though, as we explained in our brief, clearly sets out defenses that are available to people who are being charged with running a red light and were caught on camera doing it. It says if you were caught on camera running a red light, violating one of these ordinances that makes it illegal to run a red light, this is what you can say. You can say, right after that, I was pulled over by the police and was given a ticket for this, and therefore I shouldn't be charged twice. You can say that I am a lessor, and this was the car was leased at the time, and here's the information regarding the lessee. You can say a number of other things, but the pertinent one for these purposes is that you can say the citation does not support a finding of liability for violating the ordinances against running a red light. Now, what the citation is not a finding of liability. The citation is the prima facie case for the city's claim that you committed the violation. So what the citation amounts to is a photo which represents a fact, and the fact is that you went through a red light while it was red. That is what is established by the citation. What Section 040 enables a citation recipient to do is to say, although they've made their prima facie case by showing that this is what happened as a matter of fact, as a matter of law, it does not support liability. And the reason it does not support liability is because, and then you look at the city code as a more general matter with regard to what sort of defenses are available to someone who runs a red light and violates these earlier earlier subsections of Chapter 9. For example, you are entitled to argue that you had to get out of the way of an emergency vehicle. And as an aside, this ordinance has since been slightly modified, and one of the modifications earlier this year is when it occurred, so it doesn't actually affect these plaintiffs. But one of the modifications is that now the ordinance explicitly provides that assert that defense, the defense that an emergency vehicle forced you to get out of the
way. Why doesn't it affect these plaintiffs?
Seeking
prospective relief against the ordinance. Prospective relief presumably is against the ordinance as it now is rather than as it used to be.
That's right. You're absolutely right. I misspoke. It doesn't affect them it was not the existing ordinance they challenged when they filed their complaint. However, it does affect them.
We don't issue advisory opinions about ordinances as they used to be. We deal with the ordinances as they are. Are there any other changes that you haven't told us about?
No, that is the only substantive change that if to the extent it's... We would argue, Chief Judge Eastbrook, that it's not substantive because, if anything, it just explicitly states something that was already present in the ordinance before by reference, because by allowing you to prevent defenses to show that you did not run a red light, that incorporates the defenses that are available to anyone who is charged with running a red light. And one of those has always been the right to avail yourself of the ordinance that says when an emergency vehicle comes along, you need to get clear of any intersection to get out of the way. And so at any point, whether it was before this clarification or, you know, just sort of addition to the ordinance earlier in the year, which, once again, Chief Judge, I'd like to, you know, to make clear that that is the only alteration that bears mentioning. Okay. Thank you very much. We ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you. Further, Mr. Berman?
The city's biggest problem is that they ignore the plain language of the ordinance. Whether the ordinance was poorly drafted or intentionally drafted the way it was, the city's argument ignores the plain language, which limits the defenses under a charge under which is brought against the red light violators, the camera violators. This is not the situation under the ordinance that the city continues to cite. The other issue that I want to just bring up very briefly is the difference between this and the parking violation case is that in this case we have actual acts or omissions that need to be particularly looked at and determined by the hearing officer and not just a car sitting still. There are defenses that can be used that should be allowed to be mounted, but this ordinance does not allow them to be mounted. Thank you, Judge. We ask that the court reverse the determination of the lower court.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.